Certainly, the day of Jehovah draws near upon all peoples. In that, just as one does, so it also will be done for you. Your treatment returns upon your own head. That's Obadiah chapter 1, verse 15, from the Ward Green version of 2003, and that's our daily scripture for today, little children, from the holy scriptures of God's Word. The book of Obadiah, the only chapter of that book, being chapter 1. And in our day's study, let's go back to paragraph 4 and complete that, which we omitted to do yesterday, which we had begun on the day before that, and the 10 sunbirds, it begins, resided, as we continue this paragraph 11.5 of the Ark of Urartu, Part 2, by yours truly. The 10 sunbirds resided in a mulberry tree in the legend of Ho Yi, who later met the giant Peng bird that took form from the Kun, compare with Kun Lun, or a giant fish. Took form from the Kun or a giant fish, in other words. Both the sunbird and the Peng, not sure how to pronounce Peng, I can't continue on, not ever knowing enough Chinese. I'll have to do a lot more work. Peng. Peng? Peng?
Peng.
Pong?
Peng.
Pong? Yeah, the E is pronounced somewhat differently than we would pronounce it in the transliterated or in the phonetic form of the Chinese. It's P-E-N-G with an upward pitch change on the E, pronounced Pong.
Pong.
Okay. So, the Pong, what about the Fang? Let's look up the Fang, how to pronounce that. We make sure we're in Chinese. We go to the English side, translate feng, well, what is like feng shui, right? That word. And then we go back. Feng?
Feng.
Feng. Feng. Feng.
Feng.
I don't think that's correctly pronounced. Feng should be feng, not feng. That's an incorrect pronunciation being given there by the Google.
Feng.
Feng. It should be simply rising, not down and up. Okay. Feng. And how did we find it was the Peng again? Peng and Feng. Right. Okay. Simple. Similar to each other. Almost, well, identical, except for the first consonant. Okay, so both the sunbird and the Peng, both the sunbird and the Pong, resemble phoenix birds. Pong sounds like phoenix almost, doesn't it? Pong? I mean, it's not that different when you consider it's a totally different language, Chinese, and the Fong of China. Phoenix, Fong, similar again. And the Garuda of India is another thing that the sunbird and the Pong resemble. That is the Garuda of India, and also the Roc of Persia. These are all these same birds that are like the phoenix bird in those different countries. Like a phoenix, arisen but from his ashes, we have focused on consistent chronology. Continuing, again, paragraph 11.5, which, as Mr. John Jackson writes, has been justly called, the soul of history. Specifically, chronology is called the soul of history, according to Mr. John Jackson. And we end this paragraph with a quote from John Jackson that I think is still true today in the most magnificent way. He says, all that can be done to restore the true chronology of the the original records, both of sacred and profane history. That part in square brackets, the original records, both of sacred and profane history. All that can be done to restore the true chronology of the original records, both of sacred and profane history, is by comparing the most ancient and authentic accounts together and showing their agreement with one another, with the course of nature, and that era of the world which is fixed on the most unquestionable evidence. End quote. From John Jackson's book from 1752, Chronological Antiquities, Volume 1, in the preface, pages 26 and 27 of that book. All that can be done to restore the true chronology of the original records, both of sacred and profane history, is by comparing the most ancient and authentic accounts together and showing their agreement with one another, with the course of nature and that era of the world which is fixed on the most unquestionable evidence. I think we are using that method as we are doing our own research today. Very much so. And now we are continuing our study of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, Part 2. Now commencing chapter 11, paragraph 7. And we begin also with a map here showing important regions that we're going to talk about. We need to know how to pronounce them too. Xinjiang. Not sure if I pronounced it correctly. Xinjiang. Well, once again, it won't play the audio while I'm recording. Does that seem odd? I was playing it just a minute ago. It doesn't want to play it. It's like it's been muted. It's Xinjiang. That's the pronunciation of that region. Xinjiang. Two even-pitched. And the even-pitch vowel in Chinese is always higher. It's always a higher pitch, which is something I didn't know earlier in one of the earlier studies recently. So in the map, Xinjiang is this place north of the let's find out how to pronounce that again. Of the Kunlun Mountains. Xinjiang is north of the Kunlun Mountains. I'm not very fluent yet in Chinese. And the Kunlun Mountains, yeah, that was better, more fluent, is west, that range of mountains is west of this province, which is very interestingly called, and within which also is found the place, the Jade Gate, which is northwest of this other place, which I didn't look up the pronunciation for, but the pronunciation of Gans, where is it? We don't need these pronunciations anymore. That's a really good one. But the pronunciation of Gansu is this province. Is the way that this name is pronounced. Gansu. It's east of the Kunlun Mountains, and it's very close in its southern extremity to the Yellow River, which is a very important thing in Chinese history, because it flows all the way east to the extreme east of China, continues on in its journey, right from this point, which is, let's just go down here, That's a cropped image, actually. We don't see the extreme east here, but we have the Jade Gate and the place which is the Tarim Basin, which is near, it's in the province or in the place, yeah, it's the province of Xinjiang, in that province, the Tarim Basin, and the city of Khotan is there also. But this is the province, or this is the region, the Tarim Basin, where the jade was found. Almost all the jade in China comes from there nowadays. And it's just north of the Kunlun Mountains, which is a very important, it's a very important fact, because the Jade Palace was built in the vicinity of the Kunlun Mountains. Now, the lady, also called, where are we going to find, here it is, Fu Hao was a lady mentioned of the Shang Dynasty. We're going to talk about her. But Jehovah, as we begin to read chapter 11, paragraph 7, teaches us how a mythological auger drill caresses complements in the core drills of history and archaeology. The tomb of Lady Fu Hao of the Shang Dynasty of China was discovered in 1976 CE. That's the common era in which we live today. And within it, in that tomb of Lady Fu Hao, was discovered were discovered these 755 pieces of jade. Jade being a precious stone. It's green in color. In ancient, it's like almost somewhat like an emerald in color, but it's not quite as precious, I would say. Certainly not as precious as emerald. In ancient China, all jade was said to come from the region of Khotan, in the Tarim Basin near Kunlun. Quote, although early Chinese texts speak of jade from several places in China, for many centuries the chief source has been the riverbeds of the Khotan region in Central Asia. From the Arts of China by Michael Sullivan, University of California Press, Los Angeles and London, 1984, page 29. There's the quote there. And he adds that Western scholars came to the conclusion that jade did not exist in its true state in China proper. But recent discoveries, he says, seem to lend some support to the ancient texts. And so he goes on. So that's an interesting reference. We don't have that book as a downloadable source. Continuing to read, chapter 11, paragraph 7, Jade Gate, or Yumen Pass, is northwest of Dunhuang. Gansu Gansu, 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 right. It's Gansu. Gansu. Jade Gate, or Yumen Pass, is northwest of Dunhuang. Gansu, as you go west of Yumen Pass, you enter Xinjiang province, pronounced Xinjiang, the western province westernmost province of China, Xinjiang means new frontier, a giant hinterland, and is the largest province in all of China. The White Jade River brings refreshment north to Hotan out of the Kunlun Mountains to this Tarim Basin oasis. From here was natural jade transported into eastern China. Gansu meets with the Yellow River in the southeast, and the name Tarim, as translated from the Chinese, is written literally tower, T-O-W-E-R. Unit of distance is another way of interpreting it, and also tree. The shape of Gansu province is a crescent, an arc bending east and south, following part of the Kunlun chain, whose path continues through Qinling Mountains in Shanxi, Qilian Mountains, Nanshan, define the Kunlun along Gansu. Gansu means sweet respects. The route taken by the Yellow Emperor in journeying east was what I was searching for as I began this research into Kainan, his grandson Eber, and their start in Shinar. I certainly never expected to discover that along the way, compare the word way with the word Tao, which is the noun that is the word upon which the word Taoism is based. Along the way, compare with Tao, Heber, the Yellow Emperor, I never expected, founded Taoism. I am whelmed with the discovery of Taoist origins, as I am with the further finding of Gansu. Compare that with Kainan, and compare it with the word pursue also. The further finding of Gansu as pertaining to a travel route leading to the Yellow River. So important, because the Yellow River, it sounds like that's the river after whom the Yellow Emperor is named, and all sorts of things, or vice versa perhaps. But it's a very important river in China, the Yellow River. It goes back to their very ancient beginnings. And this is what we're gaining understanding about here. It seems we may be actually uncovering the very origins of the Chinese people and why they think the Yellow River is so important, because it was so near to this province of Gansu. The Green Jade, and Gansu was, of course, the route which was followed, it appears, by the Yellow Emperor as he traveled through on his way to the east of China. The Green Jade of Kunlun makes me think of my family here, as does a near similarity of Kunlun, Gurion, green. Aren't they similar? Because the L is, of course, very often transcribed in between languages as R. R and L become interchangeable between languages. So Kunlun is Kunrun, or if you just say Kroon instead, omit the first N, Kroon, and make the K a G, Groon, make the U an E, green. You've got green right in the word Kunlun. Kunlun is the same as green, believe it or not. And Gurion, of course, is the Hebrew form of the name green. Also, the language of the, listen to this pronunciation of this word in Chinese. Oh, we can't hear it. I'm unable to hear it. Why? Why does that happen? I'm trying to think why that happens. I can't stop the recording, can I, to do that? Let's see. What are we doing here? Do I want to... I mean, I don't understand why it's not working. Oh, interface sound effects, maybe. Yeah, let's try that. No? That's not it. Anyway, it's pronounced... Wei Wartsu. Doesn't that sound like my name, my first name, Ward? So I've got my name Greenham, and now Wei Wartsu. I'm not sure if it's Sue or Sue. Wei Wartsu. But either way, it sounds like part of my name, Ward, is in that word. Wei Wartsu, which is spelled like Uyghur in English. But Wei Wartsu, I have a feeling, yeah, the Tsu, it's really Wei War because there's no Tsu spelled there. It's Wei War. Xinxiang Wei War. Sounds like Green Ward to some extent, and this is the first time I've ever noticed or been noticing this. I've not been noticing this in the past at all. I didn't even look up the pronunciation of that word. Wei War. I didn't look that up, so I didn't know that it was similar to my first name. Xinxiang is not really like my last name, actually. It's the Kunlun that's more like, yeah. But anyway, there's some similarities in the sounds of these words to my own name. And since it was my original... interest in my own family history that sparked my research in all of this, in all of these articles, I keep coming back to that from time to time. The language of the Weiwar people in Xinxiang, also called Xinxiang Weiwar Autonomous Region, is Semitic. Their language is Semitic, based on an old Weiwar alphabet from Sogdian, now an Arabic alphabet. Old Weiwar alphabet. Horse bone fossils seen in China in 1928 are recognized to be copied cuneiform inscriptions from the Cyrus cylinder. And how fascinating is that? I found that. I recall that that was quite fascinating, although may not be all that relevant because Cyrus lived long, long, long after the time of 2700 BCE, about which we've been talking. He lived 539 BCE when he conquered Babylon, and when he inscribed his cylinder, right at that time. 539 compared to 2700 is the difference of 2200 years. But somebody in China copied the Cyrus cylinder, which was his great declaration of all the new regulations, the new laws, and the rights of the people. And he was a believer in human rights, and very much so. And even back as far as 539 BCE, that was something that was not entirely common, certainly, perhaps even rare. But horse bone fossils seen in China in 1928 were recognized to be copied cuneiform inscriptions from the Cyrus cylinder. And that ends, or concludes rather, our study. Doesn't end it, we can still study it. Concludes our study of the article, The Ark of Urartu, The Orient Express, for today. That having been the last part of Chapter 11, paragraph 4, and the paragraph 7 of chapter 11 also. 11.5. The last part of 11.5. Correction. So we see that the wife of the Yellow Emperor invented silk, you know, or invented the silk loom, which was something as old as sometime in the 27th century, just after 2700 BCE. And she used a grove of mulberry trees to domesticate those worms. The 10 sunbirds resided in a mulberry tree in the legend of Ho Yi. Ho Yi. Ho Yi was the husband of Chang'e, the moon goddess. Right? We saw that, in fact, she seemed to be related to this. She was the wife of Ho Yi, and Ho Yi was this great, great celebrated hunter. But we also identified his name as similar to Fo He or Fu Shi, if I'm pronouncing that right, Fu Shi, who was one of the very early emperors of China, but more in an honorary capacity, and we identified him as Kainan, but his other identity, or the name, his moniker, which I don't have here, and I do have it, I just can't play it. Yeah, I forgot to check and try and find out how I could make these work. Fu Shi. I wish I could hear what they're saying, how they pronounce it.
Cang Jie.
There it is, it's playing now. Kang Jie. That's Kainan in Chinese. And then we have, let's see if we can get these other pronunciations here. No, you won't play that one. Wow. So it's specific to certain renditions. I was able to play them before, though.
Kang Jie.
And
Fu Shi.
Oh, it's Fu Shi? Okay. Yeah. Fu Shi. That's the pronunciation. Fu Shi. Good. Or his other name, as we just mentioned,
Kang Jie.
Now, Kang Jie was the one who was also called the what was his emperor name? I'm trying to think. His emperor identity. Let's go back to part one and look up. That's his emperor identity. Fu Shi? That's his name. But that's also his emperor name. So that's why it's different from his other name, which was his personal name, Kang Xie, which is Kainan, as we identify him from the Bible, in the Bible, he's called Kainan. Right, although there may be alternate pronunciation even of that name in English. The first Kainan, in some translations, who had the same name but was an earlier person of that name, in some translations, he's Kenan. Kenan. In English, so you know, there's a lot of ways to pronounce names even in English, let alone comparing with Chinese and so on. But the Fu Shi, let's get that name again if we can.
Fu Shi,
yeah, that name is his emperor name, and even the Shi means emperor. Shi means emperor, so. And there's a name. We found the meaning of the name Fu Shi too. Let's look it up, if we can. What does it mean? It means hidden something. Hid. Fu means hid. So hidden emperor. He's a hidden emperor, see? Because there was no emperor during his time until... But he's called an emperor and he's given an honorary period of rule when we go back. Yeah, so... And, of course, Noah was given honorary title as the first emperor right here. Although Nua also was the wife of Fuxi in the Chinese mythology. So, but this name Nua, we identify that with Noah, the biblical patriarch, perfectly. And then Noah's son was Shem, who's identified as Yu Chao. And Sui Ren is his son, Arpakshad. More than anything, because of the... both because of the meanings of these words and also because of the number of them, not in the order in which they appear. After those three, there being Fuxi, and then Yan Di, the flame emperor, and then Huang Di, the yellow emperor. So, we've seen the excellent correspondence, right? Although, from such an ancient period, between the biblical record and the Chinese chronology and mythology, because in Chinese, their mythology preserved the chronology, so it's not even really simply mythology for the Chinese case. It's actually more like history, because they preserved the chronology, which was not done by the West. So this is really, really significant, what we've been uncovering here, it would appear, at least. And there's more research, just so much more that can be done. I mean, I haven't been, you know, inclined, or just haven't had the time, but for various poorly defined reasons, I suppose you could say, I haven't been doing all the research that would be possible here, but it's just so encouraging to see what we have seen and understood how we can explain the origin of the Chinese people from the time of the landing of Noah's Ark. So that's it for today. It's January 6th. 2025 of the Common Era. The time is 1729 hours, Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green, and I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. And may we continue as real estate owners to enjoy peaceful ownership of our own personal properties. I wanted to say that because that's one of the rights that is expected to be gained when someone purchases a piece of real estate, is to enjoy quietly, to have quiet enjoyment, enjoy peaceful possession. Bye for now.